City Talk 105.9 official podcasts online at citytalk.fm.
Brian Reed on City Talk 105.9.
Hello, this is Brian Reed, and between now and 8 o'clock there's another chance to hear the best of my Saturday morning show here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Joined with by Tony Nelson and Terry Teague. Thanks, lads. Now let me explain who these two fellas are. 10 years ago saw the end of one of the longest running disputes in industrial history, British industrial history, the Liverpool Dockers strike. But when it ended, these two were sack dockers. They didn't take their jobless fate lying down, neither did many of the other sack dockers. They banded together, take over a building in Hope Street. They opened up the Casa Bar and Bistro, and they set up the Initiative Factory, which to this day offers advice and support to some of the most needy members of society, and also trains men back into jobs. I think it's one of the great modern success stories of this city, and it's the best pub in Liverpool, so, I mean, I've got to plug that anyway.
Right.
It's my local. And I'm pleased to welcome them here today. Did I get that bit right?
Yes, spot on.
Spot on. That's a good start. Let's go back 10 years, lads, because it was 10 years. I mean, it was 10 years in February that the dispute ended, the two-year, four-month dispute. 10 years, it's flown, hasn't it?
It's just gone by. It's unbelievable how quick it's gone by. But the memories of the dispute are still there. And that's why what we do in the Casa to us is so important. Because there was that many people who supported the Dockers. And I know, not just in Liverpool, you know, throughout the country and throughout the world.
Yeah.
And although no one got their jobs back, I think what we always said is that you couldn't just walk away from a dispute like that, which had brought so many people together. So many people who came to support the, not just the Dockers, but the families and that.
Mm.
And so the Casa is our legacy. We're now trying to give something back to the people who helped us. So what we do there is hopefully is that we are doing that now.
Tony, just take us through roughly what happened, because the idea for the Casa came after the film about the Dockers, wasn't it? And that's where the funding came from.
That's correct, yeah. What happened, during the dispute, we got friends with Ken Loach, the film director, and he had a production company called Parallax, and also with Jimmy McGovern, who used to come down the picket line every week. And it was an idea that, you know, I think it came from Ken and Jimmy, that they would write a screenplay for a film, which is on Channel 4 10 years ago. And along with 12 Dockers and Dockers' wives, under Jimmy's tuition, they wrote the screenplay. We were the co-producers of the film. Out of the profits we made, we actually bought the 29 Hope Street, which we turned into the Casa. And we called the parent company, the charity, if you like, the Initiative Factory. And as Teddy said, the idea was to help people out, because when we were in dispute, as Teddy said before, that many people helped us out, and we wanted to give something back, especially to the city of Liverpool.
Yeah. And you did learn a lot from that dispute. It was a landmark dispute in the sense that international solidarity right across the board came in. I mean, you mentioned the American Dockers, the support they gave you, Dockers across the world. But it moved out of trade unionism, didn't it? Comedians, for example.
Comedians,
yeah. I mean, very famous comedians. We've spoken about Mark Steele, Jeremy Hardy, Joe Brand. I mean, they did loads for groups, Oasis, Chumbawamba.
That's right, yep.
And of course, it politicised the women on the waterfront. And it was an amazing show of support, that, wasn't it? Because it made you realise it was a kind of solidarity, which wasn't just about, it doesn't exist in a lot of other disputes.
They brought everyone together, the disputes. It went outside the boundaries of the trade union movement in many ways. Because although, say, the miners was a far, far bigger dispute in terms of numbers, I don't think the organisation that they had was anywhere near the organisation that we built up.
Mm.
When you think, we went from the extremes, you say we had pop stars, artists, but from the other end, we brought in people who had never been brought into industrial disputes before. Like, we brought Reclaim the Streets, brought them to Liverpool. And it was like their involvement that maybe gave us a chance of, one of the few chances throughout that dispute, of actually gaining or winning something from that. And other big disputes and political battles, the likes of the Reclaim the Streets had always been left outside of that movement.
Mm.
And I think it opened the eyes to a lot of people to say, well, what the Dockers have done, the Liverpool Dockers have done, they've never barred anyone from coming along to help out and try and win that dispute. And it was solidarity in every form, solidarity through every part of society that came together during that dispute.
And as you say, it inspired you when you decided what to do with the money that you got from the film, etc., and where, you know, how to strike out in a new direction. Because a lot of men were in the 30s, weren't they? 30s and 40s.
I mean, yeah.
You know, no, but I'm saying that there was young men who were basically told, you know, you kind of, here's your payoff, go and find another life, you know. And what I like about the CASA is the fact that it is a kind of umbrella organisation for lots of... If someone's got a grouse or someone wants to hold a meeting, A, you let them talk about the grouse and give them advice. Secondly, you say, come and hold your meeting in the back room. As you say, it's putting a lot back into the community and to voices that aren't heard.
That's right. It's not just trade unions that use the CAS. One week you got pagans meeting there. Next week you got Christians meeting there. And even today you got the Evertonians meeting there.
Why the Liverpool match is on the other room?
Yeah. That
could be a good play. I'd get McGovern down for that one.
There'd be nothing left of the place when we go back.
But a lot of the work you do now is giving advice as well up in the Initiative Factory, isn't it? It's giving advice to people, and there's a lot of people up there who have got nowhere to go.
That's right.
And for some reason, they find themselves up at the CASA. I mean, how did that come about? And I know there's a lot of asylum seekers there, and how did that come about, and how do you end up being a kind of citizen's advice bureau?
Well, it's just, you know what Liverpool's like as a city? It's just, it's word of mouth, basically. So someone comes here, maybe got a housing problem, and then they tell their friends, and then they'll come up next week with a benefit problem. So it basically, it's just word of mouth, because we don't like really advertise ourselves. But especially through Terry and Tony Thompson, our welfare advisor. Yeah, I think we got 440 people we helped out last week, last year.
So 440 people who had nowhere else to go for advice have come to Sack Dockers above a pub who were given the time free to try and help. And what kind of cases would they be, Terry?
Well, it ranged from many issues. You know, there would be the basic welfare rights, benefit issues, debt matters. But they went further than that. We went into family matters. We had justice campaigns starting off there. And basically, the people who use the CASA, I think you've picked that up yourself, I'm normally from a trade union or socialist background, although it's open to everyone. You know, our motto is if anyone comes in with a problem, if we can't help them, they never get turned away empty-handed. If we can't help them, we pass them on to someone who can. And so we decided ourselves, then, why don't we start setting up our own advice centres with people with that knowledge in the CASA itself, instead of referring them on to somewhere else? And based on that, you know, it was about 4 years ago, we brought in what we consider one of the best welfare rights advisors that was going in the city. We brought him into the CASA, working on a voluntary basis at the start, but because there were so many cutbacks in that type of health and advice, and it was something that even the trade union movements hadn't picked up on. You know, I've always thought the trade union should have been offering that type of service. And we had Hardman Street closed, and the People's Centre in Hardman Street was closing at the time. And so all of a sudden, the influx or the surplus was coming to the CASA.
Mm.
And as I said, we had to start to learn a lot ourselves, how to deal with a lot of the problems.
Mm.
But that's the motto. Anyone wants any help and advice, it's all free. But, you know, you're never turned away. We'd never leave anyone without that advice. And if we can't help them, we make sure we pass them on to someone who can.
Margaret Thatcher came in and said, this eye's killing me. Can you give me any advice? you are also actually officially accredited now, aren't you, to sit in on employment tribunals by Unite?
Yeah, that's it.
In bullying or employment tribunals, you actually go in and give someone advice and support.
That's correct, yeah.
Our first thing on that, Bri, is simple, is that if they belong to a trade union, they're still best going to that trade union.
Yeah.
But sadly, there's many, many people either dropping out of trade unions or not joining trade unions. And especially now in today's climate, the employers, again, they're looking at any way, instead of being honest with workers, they're looking at ways now just to move them out. It could be constructive dismissal. But bullying's a terrible thing within the place of work. Now, we've got like the accreditation, which will allow Tony or myself to actually accompany any individual doing. Because it's daunting when you're going before not just one employer, but you're going before maybe a panel of employers, and on many occasions the employers would like to see the workers there by themselves. Mm. But one thing you can do with a companion, you know, you'll have someone there with you.
But see, what's interesting about that is it sums up the ethos of the CASA really, and the people who run it. If people turn up and they're not in a union, and they've said, look, we've never been in a union, they may not even believe in it, or they may you'll still take them on.
Yeah, we...
And it's, so what I'm saying is, your trade unionists who were actually sacked in the end. I mean, you weren't sacked for your own. You were sacked again. Another irony. You were sacked for not crossing the picket line. A picket line set up by people, some of whom were actually casualised and were taking your jobs.
Yeah.
But you still believed in the principle of support.
But people come to see it because they're really in need. You wouldn't come up to the we call it top of the hill. I mean, other end of town, unless you were really in need. And the biggest growth industry in this country at the moment is bailiffs. Most of the people who come up to see us have had bailiffs letters. And it's honestly terrific. You see some of the older people. You see a 65-year-old widow who's had a bailiff's letter. It was unheard of 20 years ago. Mm. And some of these bailiffs, there's one bailiff, a recent one, I don't know if I can say, it's called High Court Bailiffs, you know. That goes to a widow's door on a Monday morning because she can't pay electricity bill. It scares the living daylights out of her.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you have to come up to see us, and we're experts now at dealing with bailiffs, you know, because people have got rights. And, you know, we ring them up and we try and come to some sort of arrangement. But that's the although the city's becoming wealthier, mm. with the wealth comes, you know, different problems. And these people, especially, I feel sorry for the older people, the older generation, you know, people in the 60s and 70s, because they find it hard to adjust to today's atmosphere of... you know, letters to, remember when your mum used to get a bill, she'd go and pay it in the post office the day after if she could. Some of these old people are in that thing, but there's a threat then. And you're talking about big companies, by the way, big electricity companies that we own now, that we've taken over. They send and threaten letters to our own people, and we try and deal with that. So that's the sort of thing more and more that we're doing in the CASA.
Another area too is asylum seekers. Liverpool is a big centre for asylum seekers.
Second biggest in the country.
And they come to you.
Yeah.
And they come to, I mean, you were telling me, Tony, about a woman from, was she from the Congo? Husband had been
Cameroon.
So there are a lot of Congolese welcoming because of the dispute.
Yeah.
Well, just tell us that woman from the Cameroon story.
It's typical of some of the people come up, and we call them like refugees. The Daily Mail thing about asylum seekers coming over, they got no money. That's not what we find. We find most of the, be honest with you, middle class people, because they're the biggest threat to their own government.
And they've needed money to get out of the country.
Yeah. And the girl from Cameroon, her husband was shot because he was in a...
Beatrice.
Her husband was actually... She owned a fashion shop in Cameroon, and she comes over here because her husband was shot dead by the political party in power there. Now, she gravitated towards the CASA because one thing we're heavily involved in now is most of them bringing young children over, I mean babies, you know, two-year-olds, and they find it hard to get on the register, NHS register. So we're in conjunction with a group of doctors, like-minded to us, we're trying to get these kids, especially young kids, on GP's register, which is very hard to do when you're not legal, you know, you're still a refugee status. So that's what we're involved in now, trying to help these people get on the NHS register.
And Terry, do you get funding for this?
No, it's the no one will give you funding for.
So you're doing this basically for free.
Yeah, many people have said to us, including some of our own friends and even members, you know, what are you getting involved in that for? Because, you know, sadly, the racism is still alive and kicking in Liverpool, and Liverpool and Croydon have got the two biggest reporting centres in the whole of the country for any immigrants coming in. And so, based on that, you need some type of centres or support agencies for those people to report to. What was happening around Liverpool, and it's still the thing, if it wasn't for the church in certain circumstances, council to a certain degree give them support, but there was nothing getting done for them. And it was either, you know, they go and live on the streets or go maybe turn to crime themselves, or you look at the positives. There's a lot of talented people coming over.
Mm.
But in terms of getting funding for what we do, that's we don't get anything for that. We do get a certain amount of funding for other activities we perform. But
for the initiative?
Yeah.
So what you do, this advice that you just give out, is completely free of charge and you don't...
It's free of charge, yeah.
So, I mean, you're almost like the Samaritans, but you don't get paid?
No, you don't get paid. And it's something that you'd like to think in a society, today's society... Yeah. There would be some type of government funding for that, but it's not the case. It's not there. But even so, to us, it can make the place a far better place. Because our beliefs have always been on socialist beliefs, socialist backgrounds, and And so when you hear the stories of some of the people coming from different parts of the world, and a lot of them were trade unionists themselves in the countries they fled from, and because they were trade unionists, that's the why they were getting persecuted in their countries.
Yeah.
But just to say, well, you know, wash your hands with them, don't have nothing to do with them, that's never been the way we go about things. If you know, I think it'll make the castle a better place. That's to be seen, but I think it'll make it a better place that we have opened our doors to asylum seekers and refugees.
You're listening to Terry Teague and Tony Nelson, two sack Liverpool dockers who now run the Initiative Factory and the Casa Pub in Hope Street. It's my local. I love the pub and I love the atmosphere. And you were talking about people who come back there who helped you during the dispute. There was last night. There was some London dockers that were back. I met Mark Steele, the comedian in London. Yeah. A few weeks ago. I love that. Like, she said, the only pub in the world I thought if I put my hand in my pocket, I'm going to get shot. You know, is the generosity? There's a great generosity of spirit, the great generosity of the people up there. That in itself, I think you should be proud of that. You've made a go of that business. I mean, it's been put at you in the past that you were kicked in the teeth by the Thatcherite spirit, if you like. The idea that, you know, you shut down these old factories. You don't care about the cost to society, the cost to cities. But you took that entrepreneurial spirit, if you like, and turned it. She'd have been proud of you, wouldn't she? You should invite her up there.
Yeah. No, I do. We will do.
As I said to you before, but I did. No, the day she passes away, anyone's a pound a pint up there.
It's a pound a pint. There you go. And announced that one on air. But no, you had some good times with those comedians, didn't you? I mean, I know the doctors, they invited you down, didn't they, to these, and you had to go up on stage and speak, didn't you?
Lads went up there.
The lads were on the London Palladium, believe it or not, with Oasis, you know, like to Tony Gardner and people like him. They were on the London Palladium and all the comedians, and they were a great help. Only people criticised us a bit because of getting involved with people like that. But what they did, they gave a publicity. That was the main thing, to give a dispute publicity.
Why did people criticise you?
Well, they said we were getting sexy, you know, it's not like going with actors and pop singers, you know, it wasn't like because it was something different, I think, it'd never been done before. That, you know, in old trade union disputes, like Teddy mentioned, the miners, it was like, you go down a picket line, the police will go, you'll go with the police, you try and stop the wagons going in. But we widened it out, and especially internationally. And people always say, well, there's Liverpool people all over the world. And when we went all, I went to America a lot of times, there's a lot of trade unionists in America, leading trade unionists, and in Canada, who've come from Liverpool.
Yeah,
and just same as Australia. And that's where it really kicked off in them two countries. Australia, where Teddy went to Sydney, and United States. In fact, the head of the seamen in the United States, of every seaman in the United States, was from Bootle. Whitey Disley. Yeah. Now, he was the one who kicked it off in America for us. He read about it on the internet, and then he got all the trade unions in America.
And they stopped the whole West Coast, didn't they, at one point?
Yeah.
To support Liverpool off.
A few times, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned that about Liverpool, Liverpudlians being trade unionist leaders. I mean, every time, I mean, Tony Woodley, every time you put the telly on, the tends that Steve Sinnott was Liverpudlian, he passed away. There's a lot of Liverpool leaders, a lot of Liverpool trade unionists. And, of course, James Larkin, the greatest trade unionist that Ireland's ever known, was from Liverpool. What is it, you think? What is it about Liverpudlians that they want to stand up for workers' rights?
I think it is something special that you can relate to Liverpool. Certainly when Larkin was around, you know, the Labour force did need organising, and he was a natural organiser, you know, because we were the centre, the docks was the centre of, you know, the big industrial part of the country then. And what Larkin did, he gave them workers a belief that, you know, if they're helping to create that wealth, they should have a share in the profits of that wealth. Mm. And his organisation was along those lines. Wherever he went, the worker was just as important as anyone else. They were no longer there to be downtrodden. And certainly that was my view. Larkin started working in a firm called T&J Harrison's on the docks, and that's where I started. And at that time, you know, you'd go out. I was a young lad, 15, 16, just starting on the docks. And you'd go over to one of the pubs on the dock road, although you'd be underage.
Yeah.
And within the pubs in the dinner hour, there'd be sort of militant meetings or socialist meetings, and it'd be political gatherings. And so although you were young, you didn't know nothing about politics, you soon learned. And I think that was one of the things which, you know, you could say happened in Liverpool, which maybe never happened anywhere else.
Do you think there's an air also? I mean, one of the traits attributed to Liverpoolians is bolshy. It's kind of, you know, they will say what they think. Bolshy in a good way, but bolshy was in the phrase Bolshevik anyway. But does it go back, in a sense, to the casualisation of Labour in Liverpool? That I always sense there is an attitude amongst Liverpoolians, I don't even know if I'm going to be working tomorrow, so why should I take this off you today? It's a kind of, and it's like, you've got nothing to lose because you don't even know if you've got a job next week. Whereas in a lot of, say, if you go to Manchester or parts of Lancashire, they clocked on, they knew they had employment, they had a kind of security. I mean, it was a dull existence, 6 days a week in a mill, but there was a kind of capped off to the master, because if you didn't have, he gave you a job. Whereas in Liverpool, they didn't have to doff the cap to anyone because they didn't know if they're going to get a job. So that's what I'm saying. So organised labour came from that kind of, you have to organise, you've got nothing.
Yeah. I always believe it's like part, like, people from Liverpool believe the city is theirs and even the jobs are theirs. And on the dock, especially when me and Teddy worked down, and that was the tragedy of that dispute, because when we were all sacked, you're talking about fourth generation dockers. Like, my dad worked in the docks, all my uncles worked in the docks, my grandfather worked in the docks, so I was the last one. So it's like, and we believe the docks actually belong to us.
Yeah.
It wasn't the bosses. It wasn't, you know, the councils. That's it. We ran the docks and the trade union, whether people believe that or not, no, it doesn't matter, because we agreed, we thought that. And we just done the job. We'd done a good job. And in fact, the year we were actually sacked, there was a big article on Lloyd's List, but we were the most productive dockers in Europe in that year. So, you know, you can't make the excuse that, you know, we weren't productive enough. The fact that they were claiming that we were the best. And that's why we were sacked. It wasn't over because of picket line. But we believed that he wanted to move forward and we were like the last bastion in the city of trade unions, strong trade unions.
But there was a nobility to that dispute, and that is probably why you attracted so many people from outside the normal, you know, parameters. I mean, you know, Robbie Fowler lifting the shirt, you know. Did this country a great favour, Chumbawamba? They threw a bucket of water over John Prescott, didn't they? In support of the dockers. That was at just after Labour had gone in, wasn't it? And there was a music award ceremony.
Yeah, what was that? BAFTA
award? It was the Brits, or something. And one of the members of Chumbawamba threw it and said, that's what the Liverpool dockers.
Yeah. Alice Nutter, wasn't it?
Alice Nutter. So do you see what I mean? I think people recognise the fact that, you know, there was a nobility to it. There was a cause to be defended, and a type of person, an honour of labour kind of thing that went with that. I've got to say, though, we mentioned comedians. You got a lot of support from comedians outside the city, but you didn't get too much from comedians from Liverpool, did you?
No.
No, we had a thing going with Alexis Sale. He refused to come.
Amazing.
Yeah, and we don't know why, to be honest with you. And he's more or less apologised for that since, because he actually... on his Liverpool TV show he had 3 months ago, part of it was filmed in the Casa, and the producers come to see me and he said, look, Alexis Sale's here. And I said, well, you know, do you understand what happened during the dispute? And he understood that. Alexis Sale said, okay, fair enough. He said, I understand that, you know, their feelings and all the rest of it. But to this day, we don't know why, you know, he didn't come forward, but when everybody else did.
Yeah.
You know, it's strange. To be honest with you, and, you know, the other Liverpool comedians, you know, who, like, some of them are like conservatives, to say the least, you know. Yeah. We know we're talking about that, we wouldn't want their help anyway.
Yeah. You wouldn't get it either.
No.
So getting back to the work you do today, if people, I know you've got a shed load of work on, but it's going to get worse, isn't it?
Because
look at the way the economy's going, you know. Unemployment's going to go up, repossessions are going to go up. This is going to be a very hard year. And, you know, a lot of people end up on your doorstep expecting to be picked up, and you don't get any money for that at all.
No, we do get support. It'd be wrong to say we don't get support. The city councillors have given us money for the past 7 years.
But is that under threat?
It has been under threat for the last couple of years, and it's been reduced this year. That's the big problem. We had a massive cut in our funding this year. But you see, the city council, year after year, through good people, by the way, good individuals, because we are, the CASA, or the Initiative Factory, is set up as what they call a social enterprise. Not many people have seen a social enterprise like the CASA, where, you know, all the profits that are generated from the bar and the bistro, instead of them going into directors' pockets or, to the owners. It's all ploughed back into community projects. So we are a social enterprise in action. And based on that, City Council of Albury said they'd like to see that type of thing. We're giving something back.
Mm.
We don't spend a penny of the profits that we make in the bar on the wages of people up there. Everything is either voluntary or you've got to get funding from outside.
Mm.
So we are a social enterprise in action. And based on that, the council do give us money. This year, though, we did get a bombshell in April of this year to say that the funding was going to be cut.
Mm.
And it's not just the Initiative Factory or the CASM. It's sad that many voluntary and community organisations have had their funding.
Is that a knock-on effect from the capital of culture, do you think?
Well, you say that. I'd say it is. You get other radio station presenters would argue with, oh, no, that's not the case. But I would say definitely that
because
is.
Because the budgets have got to be cut to fund it. Yeah. Which is a bit of an indictment, really, isn't it, when you think that the work you're doing at the sharp end, you know, your funding could probably for some fireworks or something.
And,
you know, it's like...
Also, you got the Olympic Games. Obviously, there's £1 billion from the lottery going to be piled into the Olympic Games.
And loads of people are going to be hit with that, aren't they?
A lot of enterprises like ours, which, you know, the Roundtree Trust said last month that enterprises like ours do more to alleviate poverty than many organisations.
Mm.
And there's organisations, not just us, organisations like us go to the war. There's a lot of people going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Well, lads, I take my hat off to you. I think you do a fabulous job, and the spirit of that place, what you've done, you've come from the disputes where you are now, is great. It is socialism in action. It's more than that. It's social work in action, and I think it's fabulous. And if anybody's in trouble, and you know, these fellas will look after you. If they can't help you, they'll point you somewhere they can. And if you want a good pint, believe me, go to Kazza, because that's the best pint of Bexvier in Liverpool.
This is the best of Brian Reid on City Talk 105.9. The voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back. This is Brian Reid bringing you the best of my Saturday morning show here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. The wit and wisdom of the Daily Post's Mike Chappell.
Well, it's been nice of you, Brian.
All right, Mike, have you got any wit or wisdom today? Did you come armed with wit and wisdom?
No, I mean, it's very cloudy outside, so I'm feeling a bit dull and dismal today.
Well, let's start with the Daily Post, because that was a very interesting splash today. Caught my eye in the newsagents. Big picture of the live bird with Liverpool to take over. Let's have a look. What's it saying? Liverpool FC bids to own symbol of City. So what they're saying is that Liverpool Football Club wants to copyright the Liver Bird to stop other people making money out of it, because it says the image which is on the badge should be earning money for Liverpool and should not for Liverpool Football Club and should not be getting ripped off. And the argument is, because someone might say, well, that is the symbol of the city, and they say no, it's actually a different Liver Bird on the badge from the one on top that we are now looking out there on top of the Liver buildings, Mike. Is that the same beast I see sitting on a badge and sitting on there?
I think any Evertonian, and I'm a Liverpoolian, of course, would find that as a supreme arrogance and would be very upset about it. And, you know, the Liver Bird is not the symbol of Liverpool Football Club. In a sense, it's part of the badge, but... You know, there's lots more to go with the badge than that, you know.
What Liverpool say is that because the club is losing substantial amounts of money each year due to counterfeit merchandise. In other words, people are just kind of ripping off the badge. And this is the contentious line. If you look at Liverpool City Council's Liver Bird and ours, they are markedly different. There's no way you can confuse the two. It's a bird. It's a mythical bird that never existed with a bit of plant hanging out of its mouth, which strikes me is very, very similar.
The thing is, Bri, just look at the way the new revamped Liverpool Echo looks, and they've actually changed the Liver Bird to look like a fatted up chicken ready for Christmas.
It's Liver Wars! It's Liver Wars!
But... So what is a Liver Bird? I mean, the Echo's redefined it as a flipping big fat turkey, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Turkeys don't vote for Christmas, Mike. Talking about Liverpool, someone who's made a bit of a turkey of the year. Our old mate Ringo's back in the news, Michael. Tell us what Rongo's done this week.
He just can't go right, actually, Rongo.
Rongo can't go right.
He just can't. And apparently he was at the World Music Awards in Monaco.
Yeah.
And, you know, why does he turn up?
Why is he invited?
Well, A, why is he invited? B, if he is invited, why, when he is invited, go bananas when people actually say, hello, Ringo, we think you're fantastic and peace and love, you know?
Didn't somebody leap on him? Isn't he saying
well,
that...
Well, it wasn't so much leap on him. He just turned up, sort of flashing his peace signs and everything, and, you know, a lady fan sort of, like, hugged him, and then...
Get off me!
That was sub-down version of it. And then, of course, you know, he got lots of camera attention, and then it was sort of, no interviews! And lots of F-words.
But he didn't warn them with peace and love, did he? He should just warn them with peace and love when he came off the stage.
Well, the thing is that he did come up with probably the best, you know, sort of psychopathic PR message early in the year, which we've already done on the programme. So, I'm warning you, no more fan mail. Peace and love.
There was a great line in that too. No more objects to be signed. Look, people are coming up to him with, like, you know, bits of a caravan or like a toffee apple saying, sign this, Ringo. But I love the when the description of it in the news was that Starr clashed with a camera crew. He's walking away and he's shouting back at this camera crew, get away from me. I'm not doing that now. I'm not doing interviews. They were probably after Beyonce, weren't they? They were pretty
everyone's forgotten about Ringo.
Get that fella with the beard. Get that fella with the beard out the way.
Who's that old get? And the thing is that, of course, it means a revision of his song.
Which one?
You know, his famous song.
About?
The one for Capital Culture.
Well, how'd it go? I've forgotten, Mike.
It goes, Liverpool, I left you. And I lost my mind as well.
Well, maybe that's very good, that, mate. Maybe we put that in the top 50 Liverpool songs of all time. But he's definitely gone a bit mad, isn't he? I mean, there's no doubt about it. He's definitely going loopy.
He's going bonkers, yeah.
So maybe his next album might be I Put the Mad in Madryn Street. But shh. Yeah, that was your little
so
Ringo.
One more copy.
Staying with music and Liverpool, the Gary Glitter Brick. In case you're not aware of this, there's bricks outside the camera, isn't there, for everybody who's played there. Is that right?
That's right.
And there's one with Gary Glitter on.
Over 1,000, actually.
Over 1,000. And yeah. Gary Glitter actually played there. So there's a brick with Gary Glitter, who's a very famous glam rock singer of the 70s who made lots of hits and played the Cavern. All of a sudden, right, all these years down the line, someone's looked at it and gone, Gary Glitter, get it off, he's a paedophile. The council got involved... Bob Waring's got involved, and the next thing they've taken the brick out. And I think they've even taken the Jonathan King brick out too. Is that right?
They've taken the brick.
I get the idea that he's a paedophile and let's not give him the time of day, but I just think there's a ridiculous witch hunt against him now. I mean, if you're gonna remove the Gary Glitter brick, what about the Who brick?
Yeah.
The Pete Townsend. He was investigated for
Chuck Berry
for Down London. Jerry Lee Lewis going out with a 13-year-old girl?
Jerry Lee Lewis, to be honest, I checked up on this, didn't play the Cavern, but Chuck Berry did. And this is the man who had television cameras down his toilet. In the ladies' toilet. Where'd you stop?
The Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
You know, drug offences.
Yeah.
The Beatles. Hang on, tell me, did McCartney get done for drug possession in Japan?
Yeah.
Was he thrown in prison?
There's so many things that...
Where'd you stop? It's true, though, isn't it?
Rock and roll, man. You know, it's sort of like... I'm not saying that rock and roll is immediately identified with paedophilia, but the thing is that, you know, it goes with the territory.
It's just this idea that... I mean, obviously, Gary Glitter, he's convicted in this country for downloading child pornography, right? Then he went abroad and... he was convicted of child abuse in Vietnam. So clearly, he's a paedophile, man who should not be given the time of day, a man who you would not see in the country. But Gary, this is the rock star. Gary, this is the musical history. It's down there.
If you're of the generation that of both of us are, I is old farts.
Yeah. clearly victims of child abuse have spoken out against this, and they've got every right to. Yeah. But what about victims of drug abuse? Could then talk out? And I've mentioned it against Paul McCartney, and you're going down the same road, aren't you?
If you're going to talk about underage sex and everything, Chuck Berry comes into it, blah, blah, blah. What else do you want to talk about? To be honest, I mean, you know, totally indefensible, especially that beard that he's grown.
Yeah.
Also totally indefensible is the silly dances that he used to do on Top of the Pops as well.
Let's get the brick off of that alone. But this is all part of a massive big witch hunt against him. And, you know, let's face it, I don't care if it's doing him any pain, but... it seems a bit illogical to me. There's a an academic qualifications board in the south of England who've been told to take a Gary Glitter song off their music coursework for a GCSE in music, okay?
Well, so seriously?
This is true. They give you a list of various songs for students to study from different genres, right? And they put in for glam rock, Gary Glitter's I'm the leader of the pack. Do you want to be in my gang?
Yeah. Well,
they've had to take it off because someone said that is corrupting vulnerable youth by having this song on. So it's been taken off. But I looked at other songs on that list.
Yeah.
Meatloaf's I'll Do Anything But I Won't Do That. We don't know what that's about, do we?
Mind you, do you know what the subtitle to Do You Want to Be in My Gang is?
No, I'm the leader of the pack.
No. Yeah. I'm the man who put the bang in gang.
Okay, well, maybe
maybe that's possibly why they've taken that.
But they've also got on there Oliver, songs from Oliver. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but tell me what happened in Oliver. Weren't young, vulnerable kids taken off the streets, led into a life of crime by an old man in a squat, and sent out with a psychopathic murderer to go and steal kerchiefs and watches? Lionel Bart, let's have a witch hunt against Lionel Bart.
The best of Brian Reid. City Talk 105.9. The voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9. The best of Brian Reid. Brian Reid. On City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back. This is Brian Reid bringing you the best of my Saturday morning show here on City Talk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool.
I'm very pleased to say that joining me in the studio is Alan O'Hare of Liverpool.com and Ian Prowse of Amsterdam.
Hello.
Who's come down, especially from his gig in Newcastle last night, real rock and roll style, drove through the night, full of drugs and drink.
drink, anyway.
That was the first night of your tour?
Yeah, we played in Newcastle last night and we were going to stay, but in order to come and see you, Mr. Reid, we got in the bus and we came all the way back, and I got back in town at 4 o'clock this morning.
See the rest of the group going, I want to stay, what do you want to go down for that for?
They're all outside now, aren't they?
Yeah, I've been lynched.
But, and you've got a new CD out, would you just tell me what's that called?
Well, we can talk about that CD, can't we?
Yeah,
because the album is called Arm in Arm, came out this year.
Yeah.
So,
And when do you play Liverpool, Ian?
We play Liverpool on Saturday the 6th of December at the Carling Academy. It's the last night of the tour.
Right.
So, are you going to come along?
I'm going to try and get down there.
Good, man. Yeah.
I remember seeing you in Istanbul.
Can we not talk about Istanbul?
You sang Does This Train Stop on Merseyside to me, and it was one of the worst versions I've ever heard. In fact, your son said, Stop it, Dad.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, it should have been his version. He can sing anything that night. But listen, the reason you're in here is with Alan from Liverpool.com is that on Monday, the results are going to be announced of a poll which has been done to try and find out the top 50 best Merseyside albums of all time. And I think that's a great idea. Just tell us first a bit about that. I've got the results. And I'm going to hit you with a little bit of an exclusive.
Well, why don't you do your Alan Freeman impression?
Because if I go 1 to 10, he's looking at me now going, don't give him the results. But what I can say is the number one is not a Beatles one.
That's very true, Brian.
I can't say what it is, obviously. No. But number one is not
the big
Beatles.
Shock. That's the big shock. And as much as I love the Beatles and Liverpool.com loves the Beatles, it's a lovely thing, that.
Beatles. Sorry.
Because imagine any other city in the world
having
the Beatles and not having the number one, you know?
There's four Beatles in the top 10.
There is.
Which means there's...
Well, four Beatles albums.
Four Beatles albums? Yeah, of course, yeah.
The solo Beatles records didn't do as well as we thought they would. Strangely enough.
Tell us about this poll then. When did you start doing it? How many people?
It was about 3 or 4 months ago, Brian. I got the idea and I just started, we emailed people out and we put it out on our website on liverpool.com, and ended up with about 2,000 replies, and it caused all kinds of debate, and I put it on a lot of band message boards. I look after the music on liverpool.com, so I know a lot of the local bands, and I put it on all their message boards, and the world just went mad. I'm scared to leave my house.
Yeah.
They've all... You've never seen so many people get so...
That's just why they're voting for himself again and again and again.
Or McCulloch. Yeah.
McNabb. Yeah. No, but, God bless them all. They all got involved, and because it proved what a great city this is for music, you know, because there's not many others could do that.
Can I tell them where Amsterdam finished?
You can.
Well, Ian, you'd be very pleased to know you voted so many times. 14th, a very respectable 14th. Can I tell them where my choice is?
You can.
I'll tell you about my top five.
You're not going to give away the top three, are you?
No, I won't be giving away the top three. Definitely not. My top five were My Aim Is True by Elvis Costello, which didn't come any. Oh, I'll tell you where they came at the end. I'll tell you roughly where they all came.
Brian's choices were late, by the way.
Very late. Second Honeymoon.
Honorary Scouser, by the way.
Who is Elvis Costello? Yeah. He lived here for ages.
Yeah, no, and
mum and dad.
Elvis counts.
Elvis counts. Was a late asterisk because we changed it. He went to school. Yeah. To get in Julian.
You know,
Pope,
I've got nothing against
Costello.
The man.
Don't try and throw Costello on me.
Anyway, all right.
Spartacus by the farm, space spiders, and I just thought I'd throw Beatles one in Magical Mystery Tour. They did so well. The highest position was 12th deaf school, and one didn't make it, which surprised me. The top 50. And three of them came in as joint 47.
That's bizarre.
What the whole food of, we can talk about the one that didn't make it. The one that didn't make it was Space, wasn't it?
I was amazed at that.
Now, Space had some great singles, but what this has proved to me, and Paul Denoyer has wrote the intro for us, and what it's proved is that great records resonate. No matter how many copies you sold, no matter how many singles you had in the charts, great records resonate, and this city seems to remember that. And that's what made me so proud about the poll, you know.
Ian, what were your top five?
My top five was HMS Fable by Shaq, yeah, Heaven Up Here, Blood and Chocolate by Elvis.
Yeah. It was a depressing week.
Was it? I put Plastic Ono Band first, John Lennon, because I'd had a miserable week. And I can't remember the other one.
The Samaritans, which one was that?
Yeah. I got the Samaritans on speed dial.
But Shaq did quite well. I'm not going to give too much away, but Michael Head and Shaq.
Well, that's the
well.
Thing, again, you know, Paul Denoyer talks about in his intro that the Michael Heads of this world, the Ian McNabs of this world, people who've stayed here and sort of local artists who maybe haven't sold as many records as you think they should, have done fantastic in this poll. And that, again,
probably because
that
people have voted on loyalty and gone, you know.
And they have them records. Well,
they've seen them. They've seen them and they go and watch them live.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What is it? Ours came in at 14th and that's my latest record. I've got another one in there.
Oh, have you? I've stopped at 17th.
A Pele album has made it.
Oh, of course,
it, well.
Yeah. Pele was in there. Yeah.
Pele was there. So I think our first album's in there as well. But, you know, I remember the head guy at Delta Sonic saying, I read somewhere, you know, the label with the Zootons and the Corralón. He said, when you're over 29, you can't make a good record because you don't mean it anymore. I remember him saying that. Now, I'm way over 29. I've just made my best album ever. So it just goes to show that people in the music industry talk a lot of rubbish
Tony Bennett's gone downhill his last 70
Do you know what I mean? Can you not be over 29 and really good?
So, I totally relate to what you're saying. Yeah, because you know, I remember about 10 years ago, or a bit more than 10 years ago, some sort of pretentious person at the Post and Echo saying,
don't look at me.
No, not you. Saying, oh, you're still reading The Enemy. This is when The Enemy was actually
still readable,
quite good. He said, what are you reading that for? You know, you're over 25, you know. So, well, sorry, mate. You know, I mean, you know, it's
stop enjoying music once you turn
30. You know, you sort of like suddenly turn into a classical music listening or sensible person. You
but
know.
Also, as well, I mean, we were brought up. Since the Beatles, right, and we can start with the Beatles, pop music basically hasn't changed that much. Proper pop music.
No.
It's 3 minutes of dancing. Yeah, it's 3 minutes
and
of...
Should it.
And so if you've had that, if we, you know, we were born in the 50s, but we weren't listening to crooners every week or, you know, a kind of dance song. So our music hasn't really changed. Not much difference now between one of your songs
and a
song that was out in the 60s.
Yeah.
So why should you kind of go, with all these new sounds?
That's why, like, I'm so proud of the poll, and when it comes out on Monday, I hope it makes a big impact, because it's proven what you've just said, and that people still love great songs.
Yeah, and the thing
is, only currency that counts.
The people from Liverpool don't just listen to the Beatles.
Mm.
This idea hey, I'm from Liverpool, Beatles.
No, Mike, what's your top five, Michael?
Well, I would say, it would relate to sort of how old I am. But the thing is that it does span a generation that's longer than the Beatles. And Crocodiles, Echo and the Bunnymen, I'll put it at number one. Number two, The Lars, eponymous album. Number three, the Beatles album that everyone always forgets, and I think it's a brilliant...
He forgot to put a Beatles album in, by the way.
It's almost forgotten, you know, and it's a forgotten album, and it's a brilliant album, Rubber Soul.
Yeah, fantastic record.
My favourite Beatles album.
That was the crossover album from them being hey, pop band to serious band.
Well, that's when the drugs started, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah, and so, like,
it's John Lennon's first record.
Number four, I would say not the first Teardrop Explodes album, which was Killing on Jolly.
Wilder. Yeah, which beautiful record.
Again, probably a bit of drugs involved there.
Yeah, well, I would imagine.
I'm not endorsing drugs then. And
not
lastly,
this time anymore.
I was cheating, and it was an amalgam of Probe records.
Because you see, Jeff Davis's Pro Plus has been sort of like the cipher for the whole thing. Because I know Jeff, you probably know Jeff as well, and the ideal of just hey, look, this is Liverpool flipping. Mm. It's like a Jason Pollock of music. It just throws things at the wall. And I was looking through some of the albums that I've got through the years from him. One was it's a brilliant album, right? So I'm going to put it at number five. Still Life by a brilliant band who only made one album, probably then all committed suicide. And it's called The Revolutionary Army of the Infant Jesus.
It's a great name for a band.
If you can find it.
That's not in the top 50.
No, it's not even in the number 50.
It's bubbling under that one, Mike.
Yeah, if you can find it.
Right. Half Man, Half Biscuit are in there. Though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the great thing about it. So many albums. I think, as I say, we had over 2,000 votes, and we had, I think, 79 or 80 different albums got voted for. Mm. Say, Brian, not all your choices made the top 50.
Yeah.
You know, not all Mike's made the top 50. And that's the great thing about it. There were so many records that got voted for. Benny Profane and people, you know, the Wild Swans, that made great, great records that resonated. You know,
I bet you somebody in Manchester copies this now.
That was the next question. I'm talking to Ian Prowse from Amsterdam, Alan O'Hare from Liverpool.com and Mike Chappell. And the question I was going to ask is, would Manchester have had a better top 50 albums? Because I think, I'm not sure, I'm just throwing that out. I mean, because you look at the Stone Roses, the Smiths, Oasis, would it, do you think it might be stronger?
No chance.
Don't you?
No, because I think they'd have those bands that you mentioned, the big strong bands, but I don't think there's anything like ours, loads of other bands backing it up.
They'd have, you know? I think they'd have a wonderful top 10, but they'd struggle to get past 17.
You reckon?
Yeah.
That's it. That's some of the best band names. High. I mean, you can't be...
M People, Take That.
No, you know what I mean? It's all over, isn't it?
They've been in the first ever rain of being there.
10cc.
Go to the Undercurrents and sort of talk about...
The Bee Gees. Well, they could go to the Bee Gees.
Ed Banger and the Nosebleeds. You know. And Death by Milk Float. I mean, that is the best.
That's one of the great points about the poll that, you know, as you say, Manchester could probably do it. London... Could do it.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
But then you're struggling, you know.
Yeah. Glasgow, Sheffield,
maybe. I think Sheffield would struggle to get 50. Glasgow would struggle. Scotland as a whole would probably do it. But we're talking about...
No, you are. Yeah. And when you say the likes of Space could
port,
make... Yeah.
We're talking about a little port. And, you know, when you read that, there's 50 great records, you know.
Do you remember... this came up about 2 or 3 months ago. And the most famous band from Peterborough was, you know... Jamiroquai.
At least you've got one.
That's it.
They probably wish they didn't.
I am surprised, though. The Sonia sound is number two.
Yeah.
Kid in five.
Our kid have made it.
Giving the list away now.
That was
a joke. Sonia did not go in at number two. Okay. Believe me or not. Something about the Beatles wasn't number two, which I can't say. No. Gun-shaped thing. Did every Beatles album make that?
No.
Didn't it? What didn't make it?
I haven't looked at it. I've been that busy with it and I've slept with it and I've lived it and I've eaten it and breathed it.
Yeah.
I don't think Rubber Soul, actually.
Really?
Which is my favourite Beatles record, which is the Beatles record I would vote
for. I'm really pleased about that.
You know? See, Alan Partridge would have said the Beatles' greatest hits and you couldn't really argue with that.
No, not really. Well, we had that, you know, a few people.
There's a song on Rubber Soul which is just one of the most brilliant records of all time about a breakup called For No One.
Great record. Yeah.
And you listen to it and think, That's a bloke who's 23, 24 who's written that. Yeah. And it's just magnificent.
The thing about the Beatles records is, and it happened with a lot of other people in the top 50, is that with the Beatles or someone like the Bunnymen, the votes got cast over a lot of albums, a lot of different records. Yeah. So certain people who'd released maybe 3 or 4 records, that they did well. But someone who'd released 10 albums over a 20-year period, their votes were like, for example, the Bunnymen. Yeah. Ocean Rain may well have won it if they hadn't released 6 great records in the 80s, It just happened.
And I think another thing is, well, of course, we're still obsessed with people being from America and think, you know, Neil Young and all these greats, and they are great. But the thing is, we actually ignore some of the our own greats.
Well, Liverpool...
Echoing the Bunnymen, I through the 80s saw them, and they were one of the most fantastic live bands I've ever seen, you know.
But the city punches above its weight constantly.
Yeah.
It's a village out there. It's tiny, you know.
Yeah.
So how on earth it's managed to produce all this fantastic music.
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not being like ethnocentric and Liverpool. But it's true. The facts, you know, speak for themselves about... Yeah.
My missus is a bit of a Manco file.
Bit of an
admission, it's a new word on me, right?
Mango vile. You can buy them in IKEA.
It's funny ways around your notice.
You put all your albums in them. Yeah, yeah, see that, anyway. But she reckons, I mean, she likes, she's a scouser file too. She's like, she's lots of files. She's like, she's Gary Glitterbrick as well.
We'll leave it there, Brian.
But listen, but she has always said to me, part winding me up is that Liverpool is a city of one-hit wonders. A lot of Liverpool groups are one-hit wonders. I mean, you could look at, you know, The Flock of Seagulls, Loads of Teasers, Black, High School Works, a lot of fabulous little one hits, but they don't kind of, and I think that kind of adds in a way, that she's got a point. A lot of Liverpool groups do one, kind of get bored and then do one. You know, like, you know. Yeah. But is there any truth in that?
I think so, because there's a lot of bands you just named, the Lightning Seeds being one, and you know
they didn't make it, did they?
I feel comfortable to give that away. That no, they didn't make it.
I mean, that's amazing.
Space sold millions of records. Yeah.
Space sold a million records. Yeah. You know,
and look at the two songs on that, Neighbourhood and Female of the Species.
Big hits, big
yeah. Massive
big
hits. Yeah. You know, and they will get royalties off that. Yeah, till,
forever.
Because they're playing American films all the time. Yeah. You know.
But with the greatest respect to, you know, Tommy Scott and Space, what I'm really proud of, as Paul, I've said it before, is the records that resonate. Singles are singles, and the best singles in the world will change your life. As, you know, Oliver's Army, She Loves You, Town Called Malice, whatever. But what this is about is an album poll, and people seem to have took it to the heart and voted for records that have gotten through funerals, that have gotten through weddings, that have been there for christenings, you know? Mm. Not the one that was big in 1994.
Well, it's like the Teardrop Explodes Wilder, you know? I mean, yeah. I put it on now and again, and went to see the... did you go and see the Eric's musical?
Yeah.
And they actually used one of the songs from Wilder called Tiny Children. Brilliant song.
It's a beautiful song.
And it was taken out of context from the album, and it actually made me want to go back and play the album again. And it wasn't just taking me back to the time when I first bought it. It was just a great album.
But you were talking about Punches Above Your Waist, anyway. But I've just looked because my printer only printed the top 17. So I can say this.
At least they still made that there.
So I've just got one in. But at number 17 is Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Now,
well, there's a single.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but were they the third group after Jerry Marsden and the Beatles to have three consecutive number one hits, and then Jive Bunny came along and showed what a ridiculous thing this was. But there's a group that had three consecutive number one hits, massive, massive, massive hits, and they're almost forgotten in a way.
They are, and
they're in at 17, so that does kind of show the depth.
So they're not forgotten, though, then, are they?
No, I mean, generally, in the kind of...
In a
national way, you would say Frankie's was of its time, with the T-shirts.
I would say if we don't...
Well, I'm the unemployed. Yeah, that might resonate again in the next 6 months. Maybe we should do it too.
Just get them out. Someone listen, get those T-shirts.
There's one serious question that you haven't asked yet.
Ask it, Mike.
Where's Ringo?
He's still looking for Madryn Street, I think.
You want us Liverpool 8? Liverpool 8 should be in there.
You better warn him with peace and love that he's not in that top 50.
Ringo's finished.
Don't go at him with any objects because he won't sign them.
He's nowhere, man.
Another thing that sums it up, right, I would say when all these... polls come up nationally. Sgt. Pepper's tends to win the greatest ever album, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Mm.
It's not in the top four here, so I haven't given that away. It's fine. It does kind of show the depth of it. That's a really, it's a really interesting poll. And I, on the back of what I just said there about Liverpool being a city of one-hit wonders, the singles chart's got to be the next one.
Well, I was just going to say, if we do the singles, let's be honest, Frankie Goes to Hollywood may have the top five, you know, because there's a band who could produce singles, but this was something else. The singles poll, you know, that what a great thing to do, you know. Again, to
see if you could get 100. City.
I don't think that you'd like to do it, though, haven't you? You've had too many sleepless nights.
The thing is, I've got to live and walk the streets. And, you know, I've had so many people come up to me and emails and phone calls. And
is this why you've got the plastic bin bag over there?
This is it.
This is going to stimulate debate in every pub. Every kid in a band is going to pour when they get the magazine during this week. And they're all going to pour through it and go, they're rubbish. I know him. He's rubbish. And everybody's going to start slagging each other off even more than they do already. Wiley's going to kill himself.
I've seen Wiley at shooting school this week. He's been getting himself.
That's because we beat him. There
is a number one. Anyone listen? The number one slot is up for grabs. It's not the Beatles. It could be anyone out there. So tell them how they can find out on Monday, Alan.
On Monday, the magazine, it hits the streets. It's available in all the shops around town and everywhere over Liverpool, Liverpool.com magazine. If you can't wait, you can come into the Echo offices in Old Hall Street, where we're based, and pick it up early. And it'll be online on Liverpool.com later on this week too. And online we'll have, I would imagine, we're going to have a bit of a debate.
You've been listening to the best of Brian Reid. I'll be back next Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. Stay tuned for Tricia Goddard here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool. Here comes the mirror man. The best.
best of Brian Reid, City Talk 105.9. Listen, and log on to the voice of Liverpool, City Talk 105.9.